So, as is my habit, a few weeks ago I imagined what I might want to be talking about today. And sometimes this is a little hard, you know, and I feel a little ambivalent about it sometimes because I think, well, I might not want to talk about that when that day comes around. But nevertheless, I give the talk a title, and for the sake of enticing you to come. Yeah. So excuse me for that. But anyway, this talk, the title of this day was called Entering the New Year with a Calm Mind. And actually, I felt pretty good about this, and I thought it helped me quite a bit just to have that title in front of me for a few weeks and to review my intention and my aspiration to live my life and, you know, be in this world with a calm mind. So sometimes if we put a Dharma topic, a Dharma aspiration in front of us for a little while and really put it in the center of what we're thinking about, what we're focusing on, it has a good effect. And I found it did for me. I found a little more strength in my intention to live and meet people and be with people with a calm mind. The other thing that I thought was that I actually, you know, the reason that I originally was attracted to this practice was because I knew that I didn't have the resources of calm and ease at my disposal. I knew that. And when I came to the practice, I really found out how much, you know, that was true. But I had an encounter very early on, as I think many people do, of a sense of peace and ease when I came to the practice. Especially when I did a longer sitting, like a day or a day and a half or something like that, and I noticed, I felt so different. I felt so, it seemed like for the first time in my life, this was a long time ago, but for the first time in my life, I could walk down a path and I wasn't, you know, thinking about something else. My mind wasn't somewhere else. I could just be there enjoying this path in a relaxed way. And it wasn't just a little relaxation. It was like a big, big relaxation, something that I had never enjoyed before, and I was very impressed. It had been really hard to do the sitting, very hard. I wasn't used to it, and nobody really told me how hard it was going to be. And they, like somebody came here today, and they really hadn't done any meditation, and so I was a little late coming in at the beginning. and they didn't really have a practice, and I talked to them for a while, and I said, I'm not sure this is the best place for you to enter, you know. And so we talked a little while, and she decided that, yeah, maybe this isn't the best day, the best time, the best circumstances to enter the practice. And she's coming back. But maybe I should have just, you know, thrown her to the wolves, you know. I don't know. That's what it kind of felt like happened to me, actually. Even though I've been practicing for a long time, even when I came to this more intense sitting, it still felt like something very, very difficult. But at the end, I experienced this wonderful sense of a calm mind, and I just thought, this is what I need. This is what I need. This is what I knew this is what I wanted to have in my life, that I needed to explore, that I needed to develop, that I needed to find more ready access to. And so I continued on. Last month, just about a month ago, some of us in this room celebrated Buddha's enlightenment. It just seems like a longer time ago than that, but it was just a month ago. And that we sat 2.5 days, and at the end of the sitting, we had a ceremony, and we celebrated Buddha's enlightenment. And we must know that Buddha's enlightenment was, dependent on a deep, deep encounter with a calm mind, at ease, a mind that could really see clearly. That enlightenment was dependent on that kind of engagement or state of mind or that kind of presence. And interestingly, though, you know, then Buddha goes on to teach, after his enlightenment depended upon his encounter with peace and ease, this deep peace and ease. And one of the things he teaches is, and one of the things that he recognized when he was having his encounter with stillness, with sitting still in silence, one of the things he recognized is called the five hindrances. The five hindrances that keep us from sitting in peace and ease and calm. And the hindrance that is directly related to the inability to find our calm mind is called restlessness, or restlessness and worry. Those two kind of make a pair, and sometimes it's called that pair is called worry and flurry. Worry and flurry, like worry and flurry, like is restlessness, right? Unable to settle, unable to be at ease. And the Buddha recognized that you know, we have, there is this obstacle. There is this obstacle in the human mind, the tendency to restlessly seek objects and a sort of lack of skill at turning inward and, you know, letting go of objects of thought. That we have a lack of skill of that, and because we do, or the reason we do is this hindrance, this tendency we have towards restlessness. So the other thing I was thinking was that you know, we just passed the season of giving gifts, right? Maybe some of you got a gift or gave a gift during this recent weeks. And I want to propose that there is a gift that we can keep on giving to ourselves and to other people throughout the year. And this is not a material gift, but it's rather the gift of a calm mind and body. When we meet someone and we are with someone who evinces a calm mind and a calm body, we really do feel like we receive a gift. We receive something of great value to ourselves. Now this gift is a gift that lets the self and others be as they are. Not trying to mess with people. Not trying to get people to do things your way, except in the Zendo. And, you know, it's a gift that's not really trying to get anything for the self. It's not trying to control people. It's doing just the opposite. It's letting people be just who they are. And I think we can only do this, and we can do this for ourselves as well. We can let ourselves have, you know, the problems that we have, right? We could have a calm attitude towards the problems that we have. Having a calm mind doesn't mean like we've all of a sudden become a perfected person or something like that. We still are going to have, as Zuki Roshi said, you know, the problems you have now are the problems you'll always have. You know, so, you know, we're going to have problems, and the best way to meet those problems and the best gift to give to others who have problems, I would suggest is, you know, the gift of a calm mind. The calm mind and body. And, you know, we recognize, you know, that even though this is a wonderful gift to give, and we might even make an aspiration, like, I would really like to give this gift to myself and other people. We really might raise that aspiration. But then we find, oh, I can't give it right now. I can't, I feel too restless. I feel too agitated, you know, and, you know, even when we sit, you know, even when we sit, sometimes we can't give ourselves that gift. The mind, you know, is rolling on, and we find, I just can't seem to stop, or I can only stop for a second, and then it just all comes, you know, racing back, you know. And so this is kind of one of the things we go through, and in our practice. And you know, sometimes, you know, restlessness. Is actually, you know, sometimes very creative activity. It's not just like something wrong that we shouldn't be doing. Sometimes it's like really creative activity that we're doing on our cushion. We're really thinking of something very grand and making a great plan, you know. When I was at Tassajara, they made me the head gardener. My Buddhist name is Zen-in Soan. And Zen-in means Zen garden. Zen garden. And I got this name, I think, because I was the head gardener at Tassajara. And, you know, I kind of wish they didn't make me the head gardener, because one of the things was, once they made me the head gardener, all I could think about was the garden. The garden and the grounds was so important to me. And I would sit in the Zendo at the monastery, you know, serious place to do practice. And I would think about the tools I was going to buy and the plants I was going to plant and where I was going to plant them. And I would waste whole periods of zazen, you know, just wrapped up in this kind of restless creative activity, you know. But even though it was, you know, it was wholesome in a way, you know, thinking about these things, but still it wasn't the point, right? And it was, or maybe it was the point. They make you head gardener, so you can have this encounter, you know, with having this responsibility, and you know, you can go through all this stuff about making the place beautiful, and then you can ultimately see that even that is missing the point. As wonderful as it is, not, you know, it's something to do outside of the Zendo, not to do in the Zendo. And so maybe that's, you know, that was the point, to make me see that. And you know, they were successful. They made a good point, and I understood, you know, that I saw another manifestation, kind of a happy manifestation of my restlessness, but still another manifestation of my restlessness. So, in the original teachings of the Buddha says that the root of suffering is what? Grasping, right? Or craving. And the Sanskrit word for the root of suffering is trishna. And that word literally means thirst. Okay, so really craving, the Sanskrit word is thirst. And so, you know, when you're thirsty, it's really, really compelling, you know, to, when you're really, really thirsty, taking a drink and having a drink is a really compelling thing. It takes all of your attention, and you want it completely to have that drink. And so, you know, the Buddha, I mean, there's a lot of talk in Buddhism about the five senses or the six senses, and you know, the senses and their objects are the locus for, well, they're the locus for craving, and they're the locus for liberation, you know. So on the craving side, you know, the senses want their objects. The eyes want sights. The ears want sounds. The ears crave sounds. You know, the ears don't really, you know, crave silence. You know, the eyes don't really crave darkness. They crave objects. You know, the senses crave their objects. And so, you know, the sixth sense in Buddhism is the mind, right? The mind or consciousness, or a lot of different words we use, or sometimes we say mind consciousness. So the sixth sense is mind consciousness, and its objects are thoughts, right? Thoughts. Mental activity. The object of the mind is mental activity. And the mind craves mental activity. It wants mental activity. It seeks mental activity. It is enthralled. The mind is enthralled by mental activity. And so that's the craving side of the mind, right? And then, you know, the liberating side of the mind and mind objects is letting go. Letting go of the objects of craving, letting go of the objects of grasping, not thinking. This is the liberating relationship of mind and mind objects, minds and thoughts. We have this problem of restlessness, and so in our practice we notice that we make a strong intention. We make this strong intention to liberate the mind from mind objects, to let go of mind objects, and we know that they restlessly come back. They continually come back, and that's our practice. We let go, mind objects come back, and we continue to work with that, and we continue to let go of mind objects. We continue to move in the direction of a calm mind, or we aspire and set our intention in the direction of a calm mind and a mind that's liberated from thought objects. So, Zazen is a kind of AA practice for the mind. We have an addiction. We all can confess an addiction to mental activity. And of course we need mental activity. It's essential for our lives, just like all the other senses and their objects are essential for our lives. And we also have a need in us to abstain. We really have a need in us to abstain from the objects of the senses. And we have a need in us to abstain from thoughts. That's a real need. That's a spiritual need that we have. And that's because we have this spiritual need. We do this practice of Zazen, which is aimed to meet that kind of spiritual need of abstention from mental activity. My notes here say no one can really teach us how to free ourselves from, or we have, how we can free the mind from their objects. So I don't know if that's, that maybe that's true or maybe that's not true, but the one thing we can do is we can set up these wonderful circumstances. And these rare and wonderful circumstances where we have a quiet room and we reduce the amount of stimulation that is available to the senses, and we let that quiet room and the people around us work on us and help us quiet the inner room. So we have a quiet room. We have people really making an effort to be still and silent. And we let that environment work on us. That's what we create. That's why we create this environment. And after a while of sitting together, the inner landscape starts to accord with the outer silence and stillness. We can really perceive that there's a silence and stillness going on in the room. And as we continue to sit in that room, in this room, then that outer silence starts and that inner silence start to correspond. And I think that that's the advantage of, you know, sitting for long periods, is that we start to see more and more of that correspondence. The outer silence and the inner silence coming together. Your thirst for objects will diminish, and you may enjoy a deep drink from the well of stillness and silence. I think that's the end of this lecture.